On this episode of The Brothers Mysterium.
Spirits supposedly move stuff all the time. They'll knock stuff off. They'll knock over a plant. You'll hear knocking.
Again, we asked her if we could go and find her tombstone.
From then, we just asked, what year did he die? And it said 1837.
Everyone you know, at least knows somebody else that has a crazy-ass Ouija board story.
And we walk by and she sees the blinds lift up from the window and slam back. And so she's freaking out.
Never, ever leave the planchet sitting on there by itself.
My brother and I have always been intrigued by the unexplainable. Like many, we're fascinated with stories of the supernatural, fringe science, and modern-day mysteries.
Though we've seen no first-hand proof of its existence, our minds remain open to the possibility.
Unsatisfied with the so-called evidence on television and the internet, we are choosing to take matters into our own hands and conduct our own interviews and research.
Now we're on a quest to speak with as many people as we can and hear the stories of these events from those who have lived them.
No Hollywood effects or exaggerations, and no hidden agenda. We invite you to listen and decide what and who you believe.
We are the Brothers Mysterium.
Hello and welcome to the Brothers Mysterium. We are your hosts, Tommy and Eric.
Hey, yo.
And this is part three of our series on Ouija boards. And before we jump into it, we just want to say if you like the show, you like what we're doing, take a moment to rate and review us. Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheBrothersMysterium. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Mysterium Bros.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Ouija boards. We've talked to Robert Murch, Ouija board expert and historian. We talked to Zozo, the demon specialist, Darren Evans. Now we're going to talk about our own experiences. We're going to share firsthand experiences from people.
And we're going to conduct some ourselves that we're going to film and put on the YouTube channel and possibly the Facebook page.
Yes, for sure.
And maybe some photos on the Instagram.
But of course, yes, we will hit you with all facets, with all sides, photos, videos, and of course, some sweet audio for your ears.
Maybe we'll go live for that one.
And that could be cool.
Depends. We'll see how it plays out.
So the recommended age to have a Ouija board is 8+ years old. So you need to be 21 to drink alcohol and only 8 to summon the devil.
18 to die for your country, 21 to drink, and only 8 to get in touch with Satan.
That's weird, but it makes you wonder, and I wonder about a lot of things. One thing we have touched on is, you know, you talk to 100 different people, they'll have 100 different points of view, but I find so many people are so aggressively angry and terrified of Ouija boards, and I'd say 90% of them have never even used them.
Yeah, I think that's true.
We've said it before, and it kind of makes me think it's sort of like if I said, hey, you know, I'm going to go up to New Hampshire, and somebody's like, you're going to regret it, you're going to hate it. It's so stupid. You'll see. You're gonna. Oh man, you're done for. And then I'm like, oh, why? What happened in New Hampshire that made you hate it? And they go, I've never been there.
Right.
It's sort of like, I don't know why everybody hates these Ouija boards.
Everybody knows New Hampshire's like that.
It's weird. And I think maybe it's just you're afraid of what you don't know. People haven't been exposed to it. But I myself have used a Ouija board quite a few times in my youth.
Whoa, man. You didn't tell me that before.
I remember a few different examples. It was your cliche Hasbro. Purchased one. It used to be made by Parker Brothers, but they sold the rights to Hasbro in, I believe, 1991. And nothing happened. And I have very clear memories of myself almost preventing it from moving. One time it was me and a buddy in his attic, and I knew he was pushing it. So I was like pressing down to block him, and he was getting more annoyed and pushing harder. And then I did the classic tug of war trick where I applied pressure, then I moved my light in my fingers, and then it like he pushed it too far, and I said, you're moving it, and he was like, no, I'm not, but it was very obvious that he was.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'd done it in groups with people and no success. I will admit we were young, maybe in like sixth grade or something, we didn't try very long. You kind of wait, and at least with my friends, someone would always start getting impatient, and then they would try to start spelling stuff or moving it or whatever. So I never really had a successful Ouija experience as far as that goes. And then one thing I don't like also is I feel like people will always have excuses as to why you didn't get anything. So in that case, people will say you didn't follow the rules, you didn't light candles, you didn't draw a circle of chalk, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. You know, you can't use a store-bought board. You need to find an old one, or you need to make your own, or you need a wood planchet, not plastic. And it's like, you know, people I've heard arguing online that Toys R Us boards you can buy from Hasbro, they've been deactivated. Those ones don't work, but other real ones will work.
Deactivated?
Yeah, they took away the spiritness of them, whatever. Hmm. And it's like, it seems to me, and one cool thing...
They took out the SIM card.
Exactly. One cool thing was Robert Murch and Darren Evans, our two experts in parts one and two of this trilogy, both agreed, which was like, whatever works for you, works for you. It's an individual thing. There is no right or wrong answer. So I would kind of like to squash that argument, because I'm sure there are people listening right now that are even saying, well, it only works if you do this, if you do that. But it seems to be a person-by-person individualistic thing mm-hmm. as to how it works. I mean, I have a lot more I could say. I don't know if I should say it right now. Do you want to tell your stories?
The first time I remember using a Ouija board, first of all, I was very disappointed when I found out it was made by like classic board game makers. I had heard about Ouija boards my whole life. And then when I had actually seen one, I think it was one of the Parker Brothers ones, because I was like, what the hell? Parker Brothers?
Yeah, when it used to come, it folds in half like a regular board game in a nice box with like a family on it
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
They tried to make it a little creepier since then, but yeah, it definitely loses that mystique.
Right. And yeah, and I mean, once I was like, how can that be such a thing if it's made by this company? But anyway, I don't know what prompted me to use one the first time I did. And I remember who I got the Ouija board from, but I don't remember how I got it from them. The girl I went to college with. I still have her Ouija board, actually. Hopefully she's not listening, because I don't want to give it back.
You're a thief.
Uh-huh. But I remember my friend and I, we were both two honest chaps, and we said, you know, we were going to go to the cemetery in the middle of the night and try out our Ouija board, and we did, and it started raining after we had asked our question, and it was already drizzling a little bit, so I don't really take that as a full sign. Also, I guess that doesn't really count as a Ouija board experience, because I don't think asking a question to the Ouija board and then something happening to the weather is how it works. They're supposed to use the spirit board to communicate.
Well, two things. Number one, how soon after you asked did the rain increase?
I remember it being pretty quickly, like almost on the spot.
So you said, somebody there? And then all of a sudden it started pouring more rain?
Yeah.
But I will say we have heard, and we might yet hear in this episode, stories where people say, they're using the Ouija board and suddenly the lights go out, or suddenly, you know, the TV flickers on. So
right. Well, this is the second thing I was going to say then.
Oh, okay. Well, continue.
Everyone you know, at least know somebody else that has a crazy ass Ouija board story. The old, my cousin and her friends were in a room and they asked the Ouija board which one of them was going to die first, and it pointed at Sally. Sally got so afraid she got up out of the room, ran out of the house, and got hit by a car. Ah! I remember Dan Mysterium, our other brother, telling us a story when we were younger about a girl he went to grade school with. And I wish we could get him to retell this story for us, but he's currently unavailable. And apparently this girl and her friends were using the Ouija board. He wasn't there. Again, it's one of these stories of someone you know who knows somebody.
Hearsay.
Yeah. And they were using the Ouija board, and all of a sudden all the pictures in the room, like all the framed pictures that were around the room, all cracked. I don't remember if it happened instantaneously or if they kind of shattered like in a row, like domino style. But anyway, the girl's mother ran in, took the Ouija board, and immediately chucked it into the fireplace.
Burnt.
Right.
So you have not had anything?
No. And the second time I used the Ouija board, it was at a big party in college. A lot of people were drunk. This thing was flying all over the place.
Well, it's because they were drunk.
What?
So, yeah, I mean, just some things in general. I remember even when I was young and I was getting annoyed because other people were clearly moving it, I always said, if this is real, we should all be like blindfolded, or maybe you blindfold everybody except one person who's going to stand above you and, you know, write down what the letters were, and then you can spell it out after. Because it's like, if the spirit is using your fingers to move it and spell stuff and you have no control,
right?
Why does it matter if you can see or not? Because that's when you start, even if it says TH, maybe it's going to spell out Thomas, but you think it's going to say, you know, the old barn. And then you start finishing sentences for it if you're misguiding it, or if it's your own subconscious, you're spelling it. So I always thought that would be an interesting experiment. Penn and Teller had a show, and they actually did an interesting experiment where they had the board placed upside down.
Fred Mertz's ghost. Hard to imagine anything scarier than that. We thought we'd check to see if the spirit board would work if these participants couldn't see what they were doing. Oh yeah, and one more thing. Without our volunteers' knowledge, we turned the spirit board 180 degrees. After all, that shouldn't matter to the spirit of Fred Mertz.
Was Hollywood at its height when you were alive?
Yay? There's no yay there.
Would you still like to be alive?
Nay.
Whoa! Their hands are just going back to the spots where they think the words are. What a surprise.
And people, you know, they say, well, the spirits need our eyes and our fingers. That's why you can't be blindfolded. But to me, it's like spirits supposedly move stuff all the time. They'll knock stuff off. They'll knock over a plant. You'll hear knocking. The adorable slam. So it's like, how can spirits, when you say a ghost moves something in my house, if you believe in ghosts, you won't argue it. But it's like, how come a spirit will do that? But then to move this plastic planchet, I need to be touching it. It needs my eyes to see. Doesn't add up to me. It's not a
right.
It contradicts some. You know, it's like, well, now that we're in the world of Ouija board,
exactly.
It needs
exactly
it.
What I was gonna say. Yeah, there's this like exclusiveness that comes with whichever venue or style of ghost you're discussing at the time being. When you're in Ouija board mode, it's Ouija boards. You know, and right. They can do that. Oh, I have another Ouija board story actually, which I actually posted a picture on Instagram.
Oh, well, tell us.
I was with a coworker of mine, and we were talking about Ouija boards, and I, you know, kind of explained that I've used them, doesn't really do anything for me. And he said he had some experiences, and as we were standing there, where we were actually in a store looking up at a Ouija board, and that's what prompted the conversation, and it fell over right in front of us on the floor.
Spooky.
Yes. Another time, I attempted to use a Ouija board, and was not successful because once again you had someone there who was absolutely terrified and would not let me go anywhere near it. I stayed in the Lizzie Borden house, and
oh, that'll be coming up later,
indeed,
in an episode.
And there's a Ouija board in the corner, kind of cool looking one. Don't know if it was actually the property of Lizzie Borden herself. I highly doubt it. But I was like, you know what? If we're gonna party, we're gonna party hard, right? So let's get this Ouija board in the center of the room and start using it. Lady freaked out.
As we said before, people bug out.
Said, no one touches the Ouija board. You know, yeah.
Two things that, as you were talking, I thought of. One is, I think a lot of the times, too, the fear comes from that story you told where it's who's going to die, Sally. Sally runs outside, gets hit by a car. I think that kind of ties into the power of suggestion. We've touched on it a few times with Chief Cornstalk of the Mothman episode we did, and the curse, and we did a bonus episode all about curses, where it's like, you use a Ouija board, and then you feel evil, and then maybe the spirit is still lingering, it's attached to you. So I think that anything bad that happens after you've used a Ouija board, it's very easy to then say, oh no, this is because I used the Ouija board, that's why. So if the shingles on the roof are now falling off, it's because of the Ouija board. Oh no, something evil's in our home. And it's like, there's really no relation there.
Right.
The other thing I thought of that you said, which is a huge, maybe the biggest detractor for me as to why I think Ouija boards are kind of dumb and I'm not afraid of them. Why do spirits, good or bad, or even like evil demons, care or abide by these set of rules? So people have a poltergeist in their house, they're begging it to leave, it won't leave. People need to get exorcisms because they have a demon within them. How come a demon will leave you alone as soon as you move a little plastic piece over the word goodbye? Why would a demon care? Why would it suddenly stop everything? People say if you get scared, it's immediately it severs the connection. How come? And
right.
You're not scared And then you put down the Ouija board, you open it, and now suddenly you're getting more scared because now you've started something and then you're done and you leave and now you're not scared anymore. But it's like, if you summon a demon or you don't, I feel like a demon would be powerful enough to do whatever it wants, which is why I also hate when people say, you know, if there's one person, it didn't work because one person didn't believe. One person was a skeptic. Why does the demon care if one person doesn't believe? Isn't that more reason for a demon to come and scare the crap out of you?
Right.
It's like,
to me, that's an excuse.
Right. It's an excuse. And I feel like it's just stupid that, you know, people try to communicate with the dead all these different ways. Nothing works. But since now we have this little planchet here and we say, can you spell this out? It's like, okay, this works. And that's why so many people are horrified of them and terrified, because it's this gateway, it's this portal. When in reality, as we said, it's a Hasbro toy product more often than not. And even if you make your own Ouija board out of wood or whatever.
Right. Like, why can't we play Scrabble? And suddenly messages will start spelling out.
Exactly. And even like it goes back to the Charlie Challenge or anything. Like, how come right now I can't say, is there a spirit here? Move my pen around, or just, you know, move my hand. I'll write it on the paper.
Right.
Move a bottle cap. It's something about just having the board. It's almost more the experience that it creates. I guess it's like...
Well, that's it. And that yeah, I think that is it. And I think it's the stigma that has grown up around the Ouija board, which, as Merch himself even said in the first Ouija board episode, when people hear a voice on a tape recorder or the ovulus devices, which, you know, speak the words that the spirit or entity is telling it to say, people don't get mad at that thing. Or they see a ghost in a picture, they don't think there's something wrong with the camera.
Right.
But the Ouija board, he says, people will go after that. They will hate that. And I think it's all just part of the lore.
Yeah, and to me, it's the environment and the atmosphere, too. It's like when you're out having beers with your buddies around a fire pit, it's all fun. But then when you're around a fire and you're going to tell some campfire ghost stories, suddenly now it's scary. You want to just be back inside. Anytime you hear the wind, you're like, oh, what was that? I think it's the same thing where when you have a Ouija board out in front of you and the plant, and you say, okay, we're going to do this, it just creates this spooky, scary feeling, and you're getting all afraid and you're getting goosebumps and your hairs are standing up. I think that is almost more powerful than even the board itself. And that's why the board has become such a symbol of both fear, terror, and perhaps otherworldly possibilities.
Hello, listeners of the Brothers Mysterium. I'm Sarah. And today I'm just going to be sharing some of my experiences that I've had with a Ouija board. The brothers contacted me on Reddit when I shared some of my experiences on the paranormal subreddit. They contacted me and asked if I wanted to share my experiences on their podcast. And I thought that this would be really cool, so I decided I would. So I want to thank the Brothers Mysterium for asking me to be on, and I'm just going to share my experiences. Real quick, like I said, my name is Sarah. I live in Iowa right now, and I'm currently 18 years old. Now, I've had three experiences with a Ouija board. The first experience was with a friend, Savannah. It was about a year ago, so I was 17, and we were just in my bedroom. I got a board from a garage sale, and we thought it would be fun to see if this thing actually worked. And we tried for about 45 minutes, and we got no results. The second time I used the Ouija board, I was with another friend, whose name is Lauren. This was about a year later, a couple months ago. We went to a local graveyard in town, and we sat down with the board, and we asked some questions.
Hello?
Now, I don't remember the exact order that we asked the questions in.
Who are you?
But basically, the spirit or entity, whatever you want to call it, we were talking to, they gave us the initials RE. We asked if we could leave the board and try and find their grave or their tomb. And they gave us permission, so we set off to find it. I ended up finding a tombstone with the initials R.E. about 50 feet or so behind where we were sitting. So I think that's pretty interesting. Now, my third experience was a couple weeks later with Lauren again. We went to another graveyard and we sat down and asked some more questions. We found out that that spirit we were talking to, she said that she died at 21 years old and she spelled out her full name for us. Again, we asked her if we could go and find her tombstone, and she gave us permission, so we set off to find it. I ended up finding what seemed to be her family, or at least a family with the same last name as hers. However, I couldn't find her specific tombstone. I couldn't find her exact name. Now, I'm not entirely sure how I feel about Ouija boards. I don't know if they for sure work with contacting spirits from beyond the grave or not. However, I don't think for a second that Lauren would move the planchette around just to mess with me, and I don't think either one of us did it subconsciously. So I'm not sure how we got the results that we did. But in terms of whether or not I even believe in the paranormal to begin with, again, I don't really know. However, I do find it really, really fascinating, and I love hearing other people's stories and experiences, and I love watching movies about it, whether they be more realistic or completely fictional. And after using the board and getting the results that I did, I'm still not sure whether I believe in the paranormal or not. However, I do have some little tips and tricks for anyone who wants to use a Ouija board for the first time. Now, in my experience, based on just the experiences I've told you guys today, location seems to be key. When I was in my bedroom with Savannah, we got no results. But when me and Lauren were in a graveyard, we did get results. So, if Ouija boards do work, they seem to work, obviously, around places where it would make sense that there would be spirits. If you're going to use a Ouija board, take it seriously. Don't be a jerk about it. I see a lot of times in paranormal movies where there will be the protagonist or whoever, and they will ask three questions or four questions right in a row, like, who are you? What are you doing here? What do you want? Don't do that. You're not going to get results if you ask a bunch of questions right in a row. Ask one question and then wait for an answer. It might take up to 5 minutes for you to get the full answer because that planchette moves slowly, or at least it has in my experience. So if you're going to bring somebody with you, like I always have with my experiences, bring someone who is just as serious as you. Don't bring someone who's going to laugh about it and joke and say, oh, this thing doesn't work. Because even if you guys are complete skeptics, I still suggest that you take it seriously, as if you totally believe it works. And most importantly, and I've done this every single time, before you start asking specific questions like who are you, etc., state that the conversation won't become scary or frightening, and that any negative energy or entities won't follow you or anyone using the board after the conversation is ended. Like I said, even though I'm not exactly 100% sure if I believe Ouija boards work, I use them as if they do. Because at the end of the day, you never really know if they do work or not. So I want to use them and take them seriously just in case something does. I don't want something to bite me in the ass. So that's all of my experiences and things I have to say about Ouija boards. Again, I want to thank the Brothers Mysterium for having me on, and thanks, guys.
So that was Sarah. I want to thank her for sharing her stories. Three different incidents. A few things that I noted was, one, they're very respectful when doing it. She says they asked, would it be okay if we went and looked for your grave? The other thing that I wondered, I mean, suspect number one was Lauren. I didn't know if she was moving the planchette. I didn't know if she would go first, you know, and do a recon mission and find a name that was around. Maybe she was looking on the way in and she saw the RE. Could have been having some fun with Sarah. Sarah said no, she's not that type of person. What are your thoughts based on these three experiences from Sarah and her friend Lauren?
Well, with the RE, my first question would be, the tombstone that they found, did it actually say, like, R.E. Gebhardt or something like that? Or did it say, like, Ronald Edgar? You know what I mean?
That's, like, I took it as it was the initials. R. So they found, like, a Ronald Edgar, which is why I was saying, I don't know how common R.E. names are, but could definitely have just been a coincidence. I mean, it was just 50 feet behind him. It's not like they went and looked for hours and then finally found an R.E., but I believe it was, like you said, it was whatever, Robert Edgerson.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Definitely what she says about the bedroom versus the graveyard, that could obviously be, like you were saying before, about what you're doing in a certain place. Like, campfires are fun and they're for roasting marshmallows, or campfires are for scaring the shit out of yourself. Like, if you're in a graveyard, you may get better results because your mind has now been primed and it's ready to go. Where when you're in your bedroom, probably not.
So, yeah, she kind of gave her four tips, and her first tip was location matters, at least in her experience. I mean, you were at graveyards with a Ouija board and kind of, I guess, had a potential result of rain, but not really.
I guess.
So do you think that the location matters?
Logically, I would say no, but I would want to try it in various locations before I go and use one. I want to go to a hospital and use one. I want to see, maybe that's a good place to use one. That's where people die. As we said in the very first opener, more people die in hospitals than graveyards.
Yeah, first ever episode. And I think that's kind of a valid point, that we'll call them hot spots. Could be these places where not only do you, as you mentioned, you yourself kind of get in a better frame of mind. You're maybe a little more open, a little more in the moment than if you're just in your bedroom when you're in a cemetery at night. You're the only two there. Your brain is expanding. You're welcoming the experience. But could be spirits there. Could be ghosts there. A hospital, same thing. If there's an old haunted house, probably a good spot to try it. Her next tip, which I thought was a good one, was, don't do rapid fire questions. Ask a question and leave a little bit of time so something can happen.
That's just general etiquette. I wouldn't do that to anyone I was asking questions to.
That's very true. The third one was no jerks.
That's a good one.
Don't bring a butthole who's going to come along and make a joke out of it or screw around. And one thing I did like was she said, like, even if you're a skeptic, take it serious, just because otherwise,
right?
I mean, it's like anything. It's like if you said to me, you want to go see this movie? And I said, no, I hate Amy Schumer. It's going to suck. And then I went in thinking it's going to suck. Then it's going to suck because I had already made up my mind, as opposed to if I said, maybe it'll be funny.
Right.
And then we saw it. And then I said, it sucked. And Amy Schumer does still suck. But at least I went and watched and tried to have an open mind.
At least you took it seriously.
I don't know why I'm
hating on
crapping all over Amy Schumer, but whatever. And then her fourth tip was kind of state good intentions before you even start. She said, say, we're going to have an experience. We're going to do this. No evil spirits are going to come. When the session's over, it's over. Nothing's going to linger. Which I guess is a good way to kind of make her more comfortable, her and her friend, kind of set the scene a little bit.
Right.
And maybe is a way to deter spirits of latching on. Maybe it keeps away evil, negative spirits. Don't know if that works or not. But I would say she had sort of your stereotypical Ouija board experiences.
Almost what Merch said, the family fun night. Kind of
right.
Thing.
She didn't, nothing too scary. They weren't freaked out. The Ouija board didn't burst into flames.
Didn't air anyone's dirty laundry, you know. Turns out Savannah's seeing your boyfriend behind your back. You know, nothing like that came out.
Yeah. No. And that's what's interesting too, is, as we said, a big part of this seems to be coincidence. They weren't hit with anything super concrete.
Right. Like letters, initials, right. in a graveyard. That's
yeah. I mean, it's kind of cool, but at the same time, it's not impossible to stumble across an RE name. And then
right.
the second time they got a full name, they got the girl died when she was 21, but then they couldn't even find that headstone
That could be, I mean, very often there's people who are buried, especially if there's family plots and their names don't show up anywhere.
Yeah, but I mean, we just can't verify it, I guess is what I'm saying. Had right. they have gone and looked at the records of the cemetery, maybe they could have found her and her name and verified she died at 21. But both of these, they just, you know, it could be coincidental. It could be more depending on what you believe and how you believe it. But cool Ouija related tales nonetheless.
That's the good old fun Ouija story. All right. Onward. The Brothers Mysterium.
First off, let's say I have a Ouija board, but I didn't know it at the time. I would only use my friends. Later on, like a couple years ago, actually, we cleaned out the closet in my dad's closet, and it turns out my mom had a Ouija board, and I still have it. To this day, I don't think I'll ever use it because of experiences in the past. Say, like, me and my friends were young, and yeah, we would play on it, but we would take it seriously. And we really like researched it before we went on and used it. One of the tips to do is never ever leave the planchet sitting on there by itself. Like, don't do that. If you're gonna walk away from it, make sure that you take the planchet, because you don't really know what's on the other side. That's the thing. If it ever starts going from A to Z, like all by itself, or 0 to 10, or 10 to 0, or Z to A, pull the planchet off. Because in the research that I did when I was younger, that meant that a spirit was trying to get through. And I don't want that to happen. Of course, like one of the very first experiences with the Ouija board, it's like you play with it and you're just like, very first time trying it, you don't think it's gonna move, and it moves, and you're like, you're moving it. It's like, it's not me, it's you. So that was probably like one of the first experiences. So yeah, whenever we would use the Ouija board, we would always make sure to have white candles. We'd always have some sort of an angel nearby, whether it was like an angel on a necklace that we were wearing, or my friend had a picture of Jesus, or, you know, like what the commercial idea of Jesus is, and a quote from the Bible, we would place it next to it just to kind of like protect us. You know, like just, or maybe just like feel that we were protected. I don't actually know if it was protecting us. An experience that I had was my friend Crystal and I were using it, and this person kept saying that she had died like a really long time ago, and the reason why Crystal and I were best friends were because we all died from this mass murderer around the same time, and where we live is where our bodies were buried. So she kept saying that, and she said that she was buried underneath the window of my friend's house, and she kept trying to get us to dig her up, and we kept telling her no. So that was really weird. And let's see, what else? Oh, going along with that story of the girl being underneath the window, my friend had, her stairs were a little bit different. They I don't even notice that you, like, it came down, and there was a little landing, but it curved instead of going straight like mine, and it came back down. And hers was all railing, and then the wall where it started going up. So, she... I walked by the windows in her dining room, and she had something in her hand, and she, like, went white, her eyes went wide, and she, like, dropped whatever was in her hand. And the window was behind me, okay? So, I mean, I was freaking out because she looked like she'd seen a ghost, and she said she did. She said that behind me, on the other side of the window, she saw a girl. And when I walked by the window, the girl ran up to the window. How freaky is that? Thank God I didn't see that. I probably would have had a heart attack. Oh my God. So ever since she told me that, if I had to walk by those windows and the shutters were open, I'd always be like, walking and not looking. I'd be so terrified of those windows.
So Emmy had a few interesting tips and tricks of her own. And once again, I feel like kind of everybody has their own laws and rules to which to Ouija. One of hers was never leave the planchet on the board. Which was an interesting concept. I guess it's sort of because then it's on autopilot. You don't know what it's going to do. You don't know who's on the other end.
You're kind of giving power over to the spirit, I assume, is what's going on there. Because she didn't say specifically what would happen.
No, like, yeah, was it just going to move and keep spelling stuff?
Is it going to spell bad words on your Ouija board?
Which also opens up the idea of, is this a real gateway? Can a spirit come through the Ouija board and now live in your house?
She seems to think so.
Well, there are a lot of people that feel that way, which is why so many people don't want them in their house at all. It's more than just like a telephone where a spirit can call you. It's almost like a doorway where a spirit could enter your house.
Show up at any time.
And is now there whether you have the Ouija board or not. So that was just something cool and different. The other thing she said was if you see it going from A to Z rapidly or from like 1 to 10 and back and forth, that you should immediately stop it. That's a sign that something bad's happening, something evil is there. Again, she didn't say what would happen if you just kind of let that keep going. And the weird thing there was she said, pull the planchet off immediately and just kind of stop everything, where we've heard other people say, once again, to use the phone analogy, that going over to goodbye
hangs up
the phone.
Right.
So if you just take the planchet off, is that the same as if you just put the phone down, but the spirit is still there?
Is that like pulling the cord out of the wall?
Right. So two interesting things she said off the bat. She then went into what her and her friend did, Crystal, to make them feel better, and she admitted it might not have actually protected them, but they had white candles, they would have some sort of an angel around, they would have a picture of Jesus, they would have a Bible quote. Her story was interesting in that basically they contacted what seemed to be a young lady who was murdered, and then I think what she was saying was that this spirit also told Emmy that her and Crystal were also murdered. They were all murdered by a mass murderer, and I guess we're dealing with reincarnation in this scenario.
Where they're all friends in death, yeah.
And now, obviously, Crystal and Emmy are still alive. But what's more creepy in this incident here is basically, she says she's buried underneath the window. I don't know if that's on the inside of the house or just outside against the external wall near the window. And she's trying to get them to dig her up. And they refuse, and then a short while later, at one point, Emmy walks by the window, Crystal's looking at her, and then Crystal sees through the window the spirit of a young woman who kind of runs up and like slams into the window almost, which is super strange.
It's jarring.
Very jarring. I don't know why they didn't push harder to investigate. Did a mass murder take place? Is anybody buried under the window?
Right. Yeah. Those are things that I feel like are good leads.
Yeah. Know? And they go hand in hand because it's saying, I'm by the window, dig me up, dig me up, dig me up. And then you see the spirit of a young woman outside the window. So it's all going back to this window, that area. I definitely would have gotten some ground penetrating radar or something, if
definitely.
I can get permission to actually just dig.
And I would have seen what else matched up with the story. I feel like if there were three girls who were all murdered, you know, in the same area there and things like that, or went missing in the same area, you would know.
Yeah.
There'd be evidence of that, even if they only went missing.
Right.
They don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be proven that they were killed or anything like that, but if they went missing.
That's why it's always important to do research.
Right.
But in any way, we appreciate Emmy sharing her story on the show. And then the one part of me, the skeptic in all of this, is of course thinking that this could also just be something Crystal's doing, if we're going to assume that maybe she was moving the planchet and she's the one who then saw the girl outside the window. Emmy did not see it. So I don't know if it's just some sort of a prank.
Right.
Or if it's Crystal's imagination running wild.
Yeah.
But I guess that doubt will linger.
Forever. I have met people who have tried such shenanigans, so they are out there.
Yeah, and sometimes I think people do it to mess with their friends, and other times people might believe it.
Right.
They want to believe so bad that it's more their imagination, though, than it is actually seeing something or actually experiencing something.
I mean, not that we're actually saying this girl Crystal is like that. We know nothing about her except for right. her name.
Just a potential.
Just right. You always have to ask the questions.
The Brothers Mysterio.
I just have this story to share with you that I think is really, like, important. So I have this friend who is kind of spiritually gifted, I guess you could say, and he goes and plays with Ouija boards a lot. And I know some of you are going to be like, that's not safe, or that's a hoax, and all this other stuff, but just listen to this story that I'm going to tell you. So we were just, like, doing the Ouija board thing. You know, we had, like, two or three people on it, and this little spirit comes up, and it's, like, there, and we ask, what's his name? And he says, John. And then we ask for a last name, and it says, Yates. And then we asked where he was from, and he said, South. And then it said, ST. And then it stopped, because this other spirit that is with Kevin, his name is Z, he took over, and he went to the Z letter. Okay, so then, like, a few minutes later, we got back into it, and we asked if he was... I don't know if we asked if he was from England or if he was from America, but somehow we found out that he wasn't from America, and so we just asked, what year did he die, and it said 1837. And then I asked how old he was when he died, and he said he was 7. And so I was like, okay, this is interesting. I'm kind of big into genealogy, so I know all these websites that have information about dead people. It's kind of creepy, I know, but it's really interesting to me. And so I went on and looked, and I found a John Yates who died in 1837, who was born in South Stoke in England, which would match the S-O-U-T-H-S-T. And then I asked him what his birthday was, and he said February 4th, 1828. And on here, it says his birthday is February 16th, 1828, which I know if you're 7 when you die, apparently, you're not really completely aware of everything, and he may not have even known his birthday. He could have been told the wrong one. And so, I mean, it's significantly close, is what I'm saying. And then I looked on here, and it has his parents, which are William and Hannah. And now, nobody else in the room knew this information at the time when I looked on here. And then I asked him what his mother's name was, and he spelled out Hannah. And then I asked him I was like, is your father's name William? And he went to yes. So basically, I feel like this is very, very strong evidence to show that Ouija boards are not a hoax and that they are real. I'm not crazy, I'm not insane, I'm not wacko in the head. I got a name from the Ouija board. I looked at it on a genealogy website, and I found him, and additional information that he gave us matched information on here. I really don't think there is another John Yates that has the parents William and Hannah, who was born February 1828, who died in 1837, like, who's born in South Stoke, England. Like, the information that matches up is just too, like, close to ignore. And so this was just a really random story, but I mean, I think it's like significant in a way to like paranormal research or something.
So that was Matt. I want to thank him for sharing his story. Starts out, they're tooling around on the old Ouija board when they make contact with a spirit. Says its name is John Yates from South ST, which is when a new spirit takes over, referring to themselves as Z. Goes back to Zemanology.
Who could that be?
Our second episode, a lot of interesting things with the letter Z. Zozo, maybe? Who knows? One question I have is, how do they know at that point that somebody new had taken control of the planchette, a different spirit or entity? I don't know. Are you able to tell? Did something change in the way it's spelling? Does it move faster, slower? Did it say, suddenly, I'm Z, I'm here, and then Z left?
Right.
I'm not sure, but anyway, Z does leave. John Yates takes over again, says that he died in 1837. He was just 7 years old. And Matt happens to be a big fan of genealogy, as are you, the study of genies.
That's right.
And he looks it up, and he finds that there is a John Yates, 7 years old, from South Stoke, England. The one discrepancy was the birth date. I believe that John on the Ouija board said it was February 4th, 1828, and the genealogy website said it was February 16th. Of that same year, 1828, but then they go back and forth and confirm other details, such as the parents' name, William and Hannah. So, we can assume it's all true. I don't think one of his friends was like pranking him and had done this research and went to the same genealogy site beforehand or anything. But if it is all true, it's pretty astonishing. Would you not agree?
Okay, when I start typing in John Yates into Google, and I start typing in the birth year, 1837 comes up instantly. Today, in 1837, John Yates born. Wordwise hymns. John Henry Yates was born and died in Batavia, New York. He held a number of jobs over the years. In his early days...
So that's a different John Yates.
He was a shoe salesman.
We need the one from South Stoke.
Right, but this almost goes to prove my point that I was going to make. I just found another John Yates with 1837...
Was he 7 years old when he died? What is the point you're trying to make, I guess?
Is that, like, from doing genealogy work, I can tell, I know sometimes that there's a lot of, like, overlap. There may be multiple people named John Yates, died in 1837.
I guess what fascinates me of this story is not only is it the name and the location, but that he was only lived for 7 years.
Jeremiah Yates, John Yates, historical records and family trees. South. Okay. John Yates, born in South Stoke, England, on February. Oh, okay. So I'm doing a little just quick genealogy research, just like right out of the gate, which is not much. But I just found that John Yates, born in South Stoke, England, born February 16th, 1828, to William Yates and Hannah House. He passed away on May of
1837?
1889. That's a discrepancy.
1839, you said?
1889.
Oh, 1889.
So, and this could be someone different. Same parents, same town. You know what I mean?
You're saying someone different with the same parents' names? Or you're saying, like, let's say that John Yates died when he was seven.
Like, he could have
had another kid and renamed him John Yates, a redo kid.
Well, you just don't know. I mean, like, you can find John Yates from South Stoke, England. Like, I just found one that had different birth dates, and maybe he combed through a bunch of these and then pulled out
the one that matched what he was closest
to. Right. Or
finding.
Then asked, like, oh, your parents, William and so. And then you can start. It's very easy to construct a story based off the information you're finding. I don't think he was doing it purposefully, perhaps, but. It's like almost like confirmation bias as you're going.
Right. I think when he starts saying, is your dad William? And then it's just saying yes or no.
Like I jokingly, when we were listening to that story, said, objection, Your Honor, he's leading the witness. But that's kind of what he's doing, you know?
So with that said, what do you make of Matt's story?
Another John Yates in England. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So here I have a whole page. New South Wales. These are all John Yates that all have 1837 in their life. I'll say this. I'm not going to say that he was making it up or anything like that, but I'm just saying, like, once you if you're looking up information while you're doing it and then you start feeding that information back into the Ouija board, I feel like that's going to mess you up.
Right. You've already created a bias in your own mind.
Right. And now you've started mixing.
Well, you're trying, right. He's trying to confirm what he now has in front of him as opposed to just sitting there and getting whatever is given to him.
And it could be true. He could have gotten this John Yates, but what I'm saying is, like, if you want to present it as like absolute proof, you need to do it separate. Like, if he had all this information written down, like, as it was happening, and then went later to the computer and found all this information exactly as it was,
right,
I would have been more impressed.
So if he verified it after the fact, as opposed to when he went online right then and there, he basically kind of tainted the story and the experience in your eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. But interesting in the fact that some of it was still true in the beginning, which led him down that path. Obviously, as we said, could have been a lot of people with that name born that year from that area. So it is what it is.
John Yates was born in February 16th. Okay, here's one. Now, this one gives the birth year as February 16th, 1828, and this has he died May 1837.
Then that's what he was looking at.
Right. But now, the fact that the majority of the sites I found said that he died in 1889, and the 7 years old thing comes into play, which this doesn't even equal seven years old. This person here, it's 9 years old. That's what I'm saying, is like you very easily mix up your information.
Right. So you got to try to remain open to the information at the time and then put on your detective hat later to verify things.
Indeed. All right.
On to our next tale.
The Brothers Mysterio.
Now, not to say that this board hasn't produced tremendous activity. What I was kind of leading up to is the reveal of probably the best, craziest, freakiest, haunted, scary ghost story I've ever had. And it does start with a Ouija board. I got to go on a trip to North Carolina to visit family for my graduation from high school in 2004. I went with my cousin, and I packed this beast along with me. I was so excited. And actually, I'm pretty sure these wax stains are from that trip. So we went to the house, and we are both very into the paranormal. So it was a topic of conversation often. We hadn't had a chance to play yet, and my vacation was actually at the beach. It was her and I alone at the beach house, and we were the only people at the beach house. So we planned on a kind of misty day when it wasn't really nice out. We were like, let's play Ouija at the house. Let's go shop and like really creep ourselves out and play Ouija at the house. We were like, okay, that's the plan. So we went out, we got food, and then we started shopping. We went to antique stores first. And I remember we bought a tin photograph of a guy, age I do not remember. We bought a tin photo of a guy. I want to say it was a young man, but I don't know. I can't guess the age. It's been too long. It's been over 10 years now. So we got that. We went and got candles. I believe we got some other object at the antique store that we felt carried something. It was small, like handheld. I want to say maybe it was a piece of jewelry or beads or something. It was something handheld because we had it on both sides of the board when we played. And we set ourselves up in the living room, and her and I both sat there. We set everything up. We lit some candles. We had everything going, and we sat on the floor, and we were like, is anything here? And we just waited. And we waited, and we waited, and nothing was happening. And so I look at her and I'm like, I can't believe out of every person that I've ever played with, the person that I think I would get the most out of with this, it's not doing anything. And she was like, I know, it just really stinks. And I was like, I just wish something was here with us from this. And as I was talking about wanting something to be there, all of the power in the house went out. Now, like I said, it was a misty day. So my first initial reaction was, is it because of like the misty rain? And I'm asking her as it's coming back on. And she's looking at me like, it's hardly raining. It's just like, it's mist. It's not even enough to knock out power. I don't see why that would cause that. And I said, okay, well, if it wasn't that, maybe you should do it again. As soon as I said that, the power went out again. And then it came back up. And I'm facing her, and behind her is a couch and a wall. She's facing me, and behind me is a little, like, square hallway, if that makes sense. And there's two bedrooms off the sides and a bathroom right straight back. She looks over my shoulder, and she goes, I just saw a foot walk behind you. I jump up and I get next to her, and I ask her to describe what she saw, and she said it was like a ghostly foot, and there were hardwood floors, and she said it was like she saw the foot from the ankle down, just in like white wispy form, take a step, and it left like when a clammy hand touches glass, that kind of like print, it left one of those on the floor. So we were both a little creeped out. So after that, we're like, okay, this is freaky. And then we start hearing sounds around the house. I know we heard sounds in the kitchen. I started hearing a lot of sounds by the front door. And that's where we were. We were like in the living room, and the front door was right there. So we kept looking at the front door. So, wispy mass figure, but I couldn't actually physically see it. I could sense it in the corner by the front door, as if it was kind of keeping us there. So, just in like walking around and everything, we're like, okay, maybe we just need some time away from the house. Let's grab our stuff and go. So we grab our bags, we walk out, and as we're going, like it's like up on stilts. So as we're going downstairs, we pass one of the bedroom windows, and it's one of the bedrooms we aren't using. And we walk by, and she sees the blinds lift up from the window and slam back. And so she's freaking out. And so we run to the car, we go get ice cream, and we talk about what just happened. So we figure, you know what? It was really, really creepy. Why don't we go ahead and like start cleaning the house? And that way, if it's still creepy, you know, tomorrow, if we left a day early, it wouldn't be a big deal. So we head back to the house, we start cleaning, picking up trash, doing some stuff. I remember I was packing my bag a little bit and making the beds in the bedroom that we were in. And I started hearing this music. And it was loud, but muffled and distant at the same time. It was like there was like a 1920s or 30s radio playing in the house, like in front of the entertainment center, but not coming from the entertainment center. And it was loud, but you couldn't understand any of the words. You could barely understand a melody. It was just like noise, but it was melodic and beautiful and creepy at the same time. We could not find the source of it, but we knew it was in the living room. We were right there. So we were in there looking around for it, and all of a sudden it just stopped. And we were like, okay, that's enough. This is really weird. So we were drying or washing clothes at the time. We just decided to grab those clothes right out of the washer, start sticking them in trash bags, and we just loaded up everything that we had, and we ended up leaving that day. We didn't even stay through that night. We ended up going to Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, hanging out with her friends who graduated there. I ended up staying up the whole night. She, I think, napped in one of the hotel rooms for a little bit with a friend. And then the next day we went back to her house, and we ended up stopping by, seeing her parents, and staying the night in one of their cabins. And it was, I know I say everything in like a super cheery voice because I am genuinely excited about paranormal activity and ghost activity, but this was legitimately like the most freaked out I've ever been by scary stuff. I mean, it was to the point that we left the house, and I've never had that happen. Most of the time I get super ballsy, and I remember being really ballsy whenever things were happening, and I was like rushing into the other rooms to find what was doing stuff. But I've never had moments where I just was like, F it, I'm out, I'm going. Like, I might say it once and not mean it, but no, this time we left. We just left. I did end up returning to that house the following year with a friend and her mom, and we stayed for a week as well. I know that my friend saw a couple things. She saw someone pacing on the front porch up top. And I remember that we heard a couple like knocks and things, but they could be explained. We weren't familiar with the house enough to know what's normal, what's not. But nothing super creepy. The creepiest thing was her seeing the person walking on the entryway. So yeah, that is my creepiest, scary story that all started because my cousin and I really wanted to play Ouija and it didn't work. Or did it? It kind of did. Sorry if I'm so cheesy. I really, really love Ouija boards and I wish more people would play with me.
A very different kind of take on this tale, different experience, and Kat herself, sort of, you could tell, excited that this had happened. Definitely enjoyed being a part of a paranormal event, which I would probably be pretty stoked myself.
Sure.
And this one's interesting because I feel like they really set themselves up for something to happen. They had said from day one, her and her cousin, we got to play Ouija, we'll find a day, we'll do it. That day, they go out, they actually bought objects that they thought were possibly had some sort of energy around them.
That's an interesting take.
Yeah, so they had the jewelry and the beads. They bought an old tin-type photo.
Yeah.
They lit some candles, but they were stoked and they were kind of went into it like, let's do this, you know?
Now, again, that can go both ways depending on who you're talking to because, oh, the mind's open, so you're, it's going to come to you because you're the vessel that's ready for it. Or any shit that goes down, we're going to say it's a ghost. Because we're in that mindset now.
Exactly, which could be what happened when all of a sudden they're doing it, nothing's going on. Kat says to her cousin, you know, I thought me and you would definitely be getting stuff. This is so weird. I just wish something would happen. I wish somebody was here. Boom. Power cuts out. Comes back on. They're like debating, like, oh, was that the weather? Well, it's not even raining. She's like, well, then why won't it happen again? Boom. Power goes out again. So that kind of ties in with we had said earlier with power going on or off, TVs turning on and off, external factors, physical manifestations in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that leads to sort of a rapid fire of occurrences. They think that they see kind of a ghostly foot. They start hearing sounds. There's a wispy figure near the front door. Her cousin sees the blinds go up and then slam down. They then make the odd decision to go ahead and get ice cream.
Right.
Which I thought was kind of entertaining. And talk about what had happened, where they then decide that they'll go back, they'll try to clean and stuff, and if weird stuff keeps happening, they'll just leave. Never a good idea to go to a beach house, invoke spirits, and then bail.
Right.
You're kind of screwing whoever gets the beach house next.
Yeah, good luck getting your security deposit back on that one, all right?
Yeah, there should be a clause in there. No, I guess technically, can you have the spirit chip in for the rental cost or something if it's another person staying? I don't know. I don't read the fine print.
You're definitely not getting your security deposit back. You lied about occupancy.
Yeah, that's true. And then when they do return, they hear kind of a muffled radio. They hear some sort of music. They still feel weird, so they just bail. They leave. And now I wonder, too, we had touched upon this in the open, how much of it is power of suggestion, where if they hadn't have played the Ouija board and the lights went on and off, would they have just been like, oh, that's weird, but what are you going to do? It's a beach house. You know, sometimes they're a little bit shoddy. The electricity's not as good here. It's windy down by the beach.
Oh, yeah, rental houses. I've been in some pretty crappy rental houses.
Right. As we said, like, were they such in a mindset of, today we're playing with the Ouija board, we're going to do this, we're doing that, that everything that happened after they touched the Ouija board, because they really didn't get too much on the Ouija itself. It didn't spell out a whole lot.
That's a good point, I think.
Yeah, and that goes back to, is it because something happened, which then their imaginations just took off? Or does it go back to this idea of, it's a gateway, it's a portal, and whatever spirit was waiting on the other side, it saw a crack in the opening, and it jumped in and went full force. This is the, this story, unlike some of the others, definitely has activity going beyond the board.
Right.
Things are happening, they're seeing apparitions, power's cutting on and off, they're hearing things. They even go back a year later, and her friend at that time saw a figure pacing around on like the front area of the house. They heard knocking, but there's a lot of different manifestations here, whether it's the blinds moving, other sounds happening, seeing ghostly figures and ghostly feet, the music. It's a ton of activity, all believed by Cat to have been sparked by the Ouija board. So it's an interesting tale.
It goes from what I would have called like the class one to the class two, and then perhaps to the class three. They kind of hit the gamut.
Yeah, a whole lot of activity within a short span is basically one day is all it took to drive them out of the house.
I have to say, like, what, kind of what you were saying before, like, interesting choice on the ice cream move, and then being able to go back to the house. It's an incongruent mentality regarding the situation, I think. Depends who you are, though.
I think you got to go back to at least get your stuff. But, I don't know, I thought the ice cream thing was kind of funny. They were like, we're freaking out, we saw the stuff.
Yeah, I guess it depends
on the
person.
Let's get ice cream.
I mean,
but maybe at the same time, maybe they weren't like, let's go grab some ice cream. Maybe they were like, we got to leave. Let's just get ice cream, sit down, and try to convince ourselves this didn't happen.
Decompress, right. And then go back.
I mean, it's hard to stay mad or scared when you've got a nice ice cream cone, so who knows? But at any rate, an interesting story from Kat.
Hmm.
Anything else come to your mind?
Nope.
The clip of Penn & Teller you heard comes from the Showtime series Penn & Teller Bullshit, Season 1, Episode 12. If you would like a Brothers Mysterium t-shirt, you can get one at fightgiant.com. Grab one for yourself and buy some for gifts. It's the holiday season. Why not give the gift of the Mysterium? If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so by emailing us. TheBrothersMysterium@gmail.com is our email address. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/TheBrothersMysterium. Give us a like. If you have not already, rate and review us on whatever podcast provider you use. And if you are down with social media, you probably already know we are at Mysterium Bros on both Twitter and Instagram. We'd like to thank the band The Never Grin for the Mysterium theme song. And as always, we'd like to thank you for listening to us.